I think that the ability to endure long periods of discomfort, which I would consider as like suffering, is a skill of a lot of really great leaders. And so maybe you are in the season right now of becoming that person. You might not be happy right now, but you can still find joy in the fact that you are becoming a better person.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
So today, what we want to do is I want to do a live basically talking about how to lead. I said when you're not motivated. This could be how to lead when you're feeling stressed, how to lead when you don't feel like it, how to lead when you're not motivated, how to lead when you feel awful. We can go ahead and pull up the first guest and we're just going to hammer it out.
Hello.
What's up, Emma?
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, great, thank you. So my question's kind of related. It's how do I lead when I haven't led before when starting a business, but when you also have a tendency to overthink others' opinions of you?
Oh, so tell me, how long have you had a business now?
Only just started like a month.
Well, congratulations. What made you start?
Something I've wanted to do for a long time. And so I just thought I would just start.
Yeah, really cool. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Wow. So first time. And do you have any employees right now?
No, just me at the moment. But
just me.
Hoping to expand soon.
Really cool. Yeah, it's a really good question, Emma, because I think the first time, to give you context, that I got into, I would say, like leadership, I was 22 and I had no idea what I was doing. I had never managed anyone before. I'd never led anyone before. I'd never done anything like that before. And I think that in your position, if you've never done it before, I'll just put it to you like this. It's not rocket science. Like, we're not building rocket ships over here for Elon. You know what I mean? And so when people are like, I'm really scared to become a leader or to get into management, I'm like, that is totally justified because you've never done it before. So you have no idea what to expect. And when we don't know what to expect, we feel scared. And so that makes complete sense, for one. So I think it's very normal. And what it tells me is that you probably care a lot. You probably care that you want people to do well under you. You want to make sure that you do good to the people that you bring on. At the same time, it's not overly complicated. And so I always like to remind people, I'm like, one, well, in most of the businesses that I speak with, it's like, we're not saving people's lives here. I used to say to my team, like, hey, we're not saving babies. So like, it's okay to make mistakes. You know, it's not like you're not going to die. Nobody around you is going to die. At most, like maybe somebody quits. And so I think it is the second thing that I would say is like, really important to contextualize for yourself when you're a first-time leader, what are the real consequences of what could happen? And I think that sometimes it helps us to play that out because they're never as bad as we expect them to be or as we imagine them to be. And so the best thing that I think that you can do is just be completely honest with people about your inexperience. The thing is, what people don't like is when somebody who's inexperienced fakes experience, because people who are experienced, maybe people that you'll eventually hire, they know what an experienced leader sounds like. And they'd be like, this is not it. And so the best thing that you can do and that you can have on your side is that you are completely honest and you completely just own the fact that you've never done it before. And you can even tell them, I'm just learning this along the way as well. So what does that mean for you? For people that you lead when you are less experienced is to say like, well, one, I'm invested in you learning as well because I'm on this journey myself. And it gives you more room to step up because there's still things that I lack skills in. And so a lot of people, when I started my business, were very attracted to working for me because I lacked the skills. And so what that meant, imagine this, right? You come from a place where your boss is completely overbearing and they are very skilled, but there's no room for you to add value because that boss does a lot. Well, in this instance, if you're inexperienced, and like it was for me, is that I actually needed people who were skilled to step up even further because I didn't have those skills yet. And so I actually think there's a huge opportunity for people to work for you who want more autonomy and want more room to grow. There's no need to be perfect. Nobody likes working for somebody who's perfect either, because here's the thing, is that then it makes them feel like they have to be that way. And you don't want to make people feel like they walk on eggshells and have to be some robots. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Congratulations on starting your business. Really freaking cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, Leela, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. You remember me?
You know, I was like, wait, are we on Zoom? I'm so confused.
Yeah, it's our quarterly meeting.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you for selecting my question, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So here's my question. You're a leader, right? I'm a leader. And I think one of the reasons why we do this is because we have a passion and a desire to inspire and motivate and encourage others, right? To do great things, right? So my question to you is, one of the things I love to do, by the way, that I get a lot of fulfillment out of is filling up other people's tanks, right? So
Totally. My
question is, what about when our tank runs low? What about when we're out of oxygen, right? Like, who is inspiring us, or who do we look to inspire us? Or better yet, what tactics or techniques do you use to rekindle that passion when you start running low?
It's a really good question. I'll admit that I think that I could answer this question well because it's something I struggle with myself, which is I tend to not be great at asking for help. So I'm used to, and I'm guessing you are too, I mean, just knowing you, like being the one that everyone can go to, and I am the rock for every single person. I also tend to put my needs always last and kind of just avoid them in general at times. I've realized, especially in the last 2 years, that when I do not ask for help from my team, there's two things that happen, which is like, one, people had to catch on to things and they're intuitive. And so it's like, they can tell that something is off, but they don't know what that thing is. The second piece to it is that, well, I'll say, and to that, sometimes they think it's them. They don't know that it's just me. They just think it's them because I haven't told them, right? And I think to the second degree is, I really don't think that until you give somebody the opportunity to step up, you will ever find out if they're capable. And so for you, I think it's using your challenge as an opportunity to present to somebody else. So the challenge that you have, whatever it is that's taking up too much of your time, can be presented as an opportunity to somebody else on the team. And that's the way that I've started to, I would say, like reframe my own challenges, is that if I have a challenge, and this is the next thing I'll give you, is that your time is probably a more valuable resource than theirs. And so for you to be stressed and to be burnt out is probably, this sounds terrible, but it's the truth, more detrimental to the business than the person below you. And you probably have the skills to already do the thing. You probably don't have the bandwidth. That person doesn't have the skills. And so if they have the bandwidth, but they don't have the skills, it's an opportunity for them to, I would say, offer their help. And so I think that's the first thing that I do in those scenarios is like, I'm like, okay, even if I don't believe that it's going to happen or that it's possible, I'm like, I'm going to put it out there because you just never know. And I will say that more times than not, people impress me.
So are there things that you do, or are there any practices that you employ behind the scenes to give yourself that reboot? Like when Layla's alone, like is there something that she's doing to say, you know what, I've got to reboot today, I've got to show up, and this is what I'm doing to get myself pumped up?
I actually think it's quite the opposite. I think that I put a different hat on. So when I'm feeling burnt out and feeling, I would say, just not motivated, whatever word you want to use to describe the feeling, I lean into it. Which is like, instead of trying to escape from it and trying to cope with it, I know it sounds weird, but like, I recognize and observe that I am in a season of hard, and it's going to get worse, and it's going to feel worse. And oftentimes what I realize is like, my resistance to that is actually what makes it worse. Is like, I get mad at the fact that I'm stressed, or I get frustrated at the fact that I'm stressed. I get annoyed at the fact that I'm so tired.
And it just increases that level of stress, because now you're frustrated and annoyed and stressed at the same time.
Yes, it's literally escalating my practical problem to an emotional disturbance.
Right.
I need this thing done and nobody else can do it. And now I get frustrated at that. And now I've escalated into like a full blown, like Layla's now actually generally stressed all the time. And so for me, it's like the only thing that has worked for me has not been like taking a bubble bath, taking a vacation, planning out my days, nothing like that. It has literally been being like, it's going to be.
just dive into that mud bath.
Just dive into it. Like, and I literally picture myself like bathing in it, because there's nothing you can do to escape it. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people don't do this, and the reason why a lot of people quit. And instead, I remind myself, I was writing this tweet, I think it was like 2 days ago, when I woke up at like 3 a.m. from stress. And it was like, confidence is not built off of public praise and recognition of others. Confidence is built behind closed doors, in the moments when you want to give up, you're white knuckling it, your teeth gritting, and you don't give up, and nobody will ever know it. And I think that that's the opportunity that you have that nobody else does. And maybe it'll help you because it's, I always have to remind myself and I'll catch it. I'm like, oh, I've been trying to fix this and avoid it. And I've just got to dive into it and just embrace it.
You know, you just nailed it on the head, right? You can't fix it. You just got to get right into it, right? You just got to embrace the situation. I love that. Listen, it's good to know and hear that, you know, other people also feel this way, right? That they fall through these situations and snares as well, right? I mean, you're not going to find yourself in a leadership position without finding yourself getting burnt out or running out of oxygen as well. I have one more question if I can ask, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
I live by three core values, right? Both personal, professional life, and that's transparency, collaboration, and passion, right? I think transparency is very important. Be authentic, be genuine with your thoughts and feelings. Collaboration, I can do a lot of great things by myself, but I love being part of a team. And passion, listen, if you don't like what you're doing, then do something else, right? That's how I always look at it. So I would love to know what your core values are. Like, what do you live by? What are the values that you stand by that this is who you are if you had to describe yourself in those three words?
Yeah, it's actually funny you say that. So I have made my own personal values my company values, for real, because I just think it's all the same. Yeah. The first is competitive greatness, which is I do things not for, I would say, the outcome, but for the process of the person it makes me. And I don't like people who don't do that. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody plays the game until they've made a certain amount of money or plays the game until they have a certain amount of fame, they're not somebody I want to associate with. Same with like people who join our team. If you're clock in, clock out, like there's nothing wrong with that. It just doesn't mesh well here. The second one is sincere candor. I think I have always tried my hardest not to be perfect, but to be honest. And I try really hard to keep that frame with every relationship that I have. And I also ask for it back, I would say. And if it's not reciprocated, I typically exit the relationship because I didn't say I'd be perfect, but I said be honest. And that's something I really value in people. And then the last one is unimpeachable character, which is honestly, when I look at it, it's people who do the hard thing, even though it's the right thing. And I would say that partially goes with competitive greatness. And it partially goes with, I would say, like people who choose to suffer because it is the right thing to do is fair and equitable. And I like to associate with people who are willing to do that and have the tenacity to do it as well. And so those are the three things that I find are most important to me and in the people I surround myself with. And I do try, I mean, obviously I'm not perfect, but I try very hard to hold myself to those standards. So
those are beautiful. I really appreciate you sharing those with me. But no, that was it. Listen, this was fun. Thank you so much for answering my questions. It's really good to see you.
I love it. Thanks, Joe.
Awesome. Bye.
Layla, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
Nice to meet you. I'm a huge fan of everything that you guys are doing at acquisition.com. And my brother and... Yeah, you see the books back there?
Yeah. Love
my brother-in-law-to-be, my fiance's brother and I, we had like a whole like watch event the day that the book launched and everything. So really appreciate what you guys are doing.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, love it. So I'm just going to kind of get into it. So I'm the founder of Cosmosify, a consulting agency that helps residential general contractors bring order to their companies by operationalizing their businesses. A big part of doing what I help contractors do effectively is hiring everyone from leaders to individual contributors. And so the question that I have for you is kind of twofold. So the first one comes from a real space because I've ran into this with some of my partner contractors' companies already, where we bring someone on, but then after they come on, we realize that it's not necessarily the best fit. So how do you let someone go who is performing, but they just don't align with like the company values?
Yeah, it's a really good question to ask. I like to be honest about these things, which is typically, in my opinion, if somebody is not a culture fit, that's probably an interview process issue, right? Which is like, what more can we do on the front end to filter out for this? I would say that I like to measure cultural, like, is someone a values fit by, do they exemplify the values through the behaviors? Because just saying that, like, yeah, I'm trustworthy, but okay, well, if you lie to everybody, then you're not, right? And so first off is in a company, I think it's really important to say what behaviors indicate that a person has these values. So then when a person comes in, they understand that those are behaviors that they are measured on. So for example, like in our quarterly reviews and such, we have behaviors that would indicate that somebody abides to the values that we have, right? So if somebody comes in and they're new and they're, quote, not a fit, then I think that the best thing that you can do is just let them go and say it's because it's not a fit. Now, here's the thing. I'm not an HR professional or a legal professional, but I will tell you this. The more reasons, and this is really unfortunate, but it's the truth. In any argument or in any conversation where you're ending a relationship, the more things that you list as to why you end it, the more pieces of data you give them to argue back against you and to say, oh, that is not true. Let me tell you why. So yeah. The more reasons you provide, whether it's breaking up with somebody, whether it's quitting a job, or whether it's firing somebody, the more data that you provide, the longer you drag out the process and conversation, and likely the more painful you make it for the person. Because yeah. also the more data that you give them to poke holes in your claims and to say that you're not lying. And so I honestly just have the script of like, you know what? It's just not a fit. And so we're just going to have to move on. I like to give them a good severance because I don't want anyone to be high and dry. They just quit their job to come there. And so I tend to really short conversation, really good package upon exit to make sure that they can set themselves up successfully. Even if that means, like for me personally, I will even try and replace them somewhere if I know somebody who is looking for the thing. Oh, and wow. So like I'll put feelers out in my network and say like, I've got this person, great performer. Here's why they're not a fit for me, but I thought they might be a fit for you. You know, would you be open to an interview? And so in those instances, sometimes I'll set people up with like 2 to 3 interviews so that it's like, okay, not only am I'm just ending it now because, hey, you're not going to have a career here. So it's better for me to do it now, not later. Second is I'm going to give you a good severance package because I want to do right by you and you quit your job to come here and this is on me. And the next one is, how can I go even far above and beyond that? Is how can I set them up for success in their next venture? Which could be like, let me help you rewrite your resume. Let me set you up with 2 to 3 interviews. Or it could be like, let me be a reference for these jobs that you're taking on. Mm-hmm. And so I would say any one or all three of those things are things that you can offer in those instances. Because like you said, the person has a skill. It's just, they're probably a better fit for somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly it.
Guys, I just want to take a quick break to thank all of you for listening to the show so far. If you enjoy what you're listening to, I would be so grateful if you would just consider leaving me a review or even sharing it with somebody who you think would love to hear the kind of content. As you can see, I don't run ads on here, so the only way that this show grows is if we can continue to make awesome content, and the only way I can do that is through you liking, subscribing, and rating. All right, let's get back to it.
And the second, I mean, like you kind of answered both of the questions that I had. I'll say this, like in sales roles, one thing that we do when recruiting is we get on mock calls and we'll do like a role play of like an outbound call, an inbound call, or something like that.
Yeah.
But what is a way to assess culture fit outside of like scenario-based questions that's tangible?
I look at it like you have, I call it the 4-way fit. You've got organizational fit, which is culture and values. You have skill fit, which is, are they capable of doing the job? You have potential fit, which is where you intend the job to go, where they want the job to go. And so within the culture fit piece, I mean, I hone in on basically, I break down our values and then I break down 2 to 3 questions that would indicate if they exemplify those values or not. I think that the issue is that most people are very bad at asking questions and they're bad at understanding if somebody's answer is bullshit or not. So if I say, hey, you know, one of our values is sincere candor, like tell me about the last time we had a hard conversation and what was it? If they take 5 minutes to recall a hard conversation, and then when they do bring it up, it's very vague. They don't talk about names, times, no details of the conversation, versus if somebody immediately recalls and they're like, actually yesterday, and here's what happened with me and John, probably very likely that it is actually a legitimate discussion that they had.
That's
fair. So I think it's kind of on both sides, which is like, you have to understand when somebody is, if somebody uses very little details and is very vague and takes a long time to answer the question, it is likely that they are making it up. And then on the other side, you have to know how to ask pointed questions. And I think that a lot of people don't know how to actually ask a question that would infer if this person exemplifies those values, which goes back to what behaviors does somebody have to exemplify that dictates that value? So I'll give you an example. So our value, competitive greatness, what does that mean? To me, that means that if a customer calls at 4:59 and you clock out at 5, do you answer the call or not?
Yeah, that's huge.
If you clock in, clock out, and you're not competitively great by my standard, then you would say no, because I have to leave in 1 minute. Nobody on my team would do that. They would all say, absolutely, I'm going to answer the phone. Are you kidding me? I'll answer the phone at 5:10. And so I think that I would relook at the questions that you're asking and say, like, are we operationalizing our values? Meaning like, are we turning these values into behaviors and then asking questions to find out if they already do these behaviors?
Yeah. That's huge. You fully answered the question. Over-delivered for sure.
Good. I'm glad then. Sick.
Yeah. I appreciate it a ton, Layla. Looking forward to future events, workshops that you guys host. Looking forward to meeting you guys in person.
Oh, exciting. Yeah. I'm going to look up your company after this. Lots of pain.
I'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, Layla, how are you?
Hey, do you go by Nicholas or Nick?
Either or.
I'm going to call you Nick because it's one syllable.
Sounds good. This is pretty cool. It's awesome to meet you. Just wanted
to meet you too.
Yeah, sincerely thank you and Alex both for the education and information that you guys make accessible. You guys have just been instrumental to my journey so far. So means a lot to be able to tell you that directly. My first question is something I'm going through in real time right now, and it's, how do you lead through an extremely busy season of the business when your personal stress is at an all-time high?
Yeah, totally relate to you on that. I'm really glad you asked the question. I have found for myself that my team should never have to bear the weight of my emotions, but that doesn't mean that they don't have to know what I am dealing with and how it may be affecting me. So the first thing that I do when I'm leading through a time that's very stressful for me is I just tell them the truth, which is I will disclose as much as I'm comfortable, which for me, I tell pretty much everything. So I'll be like, hey, I just want to let you guys know, maybe it's a sick family, right? So-and-so is sick. And so I don't want to use that as an excuse for how I show up, but I just want to let you guys know that if I show up and seem like a little bit less excited and less enthused on the calls, and I don't bring my best self every single day, I want you to know that one, I'm really trying. Two, I'm not perfect. And three, this is why. And I want you guys to understand this, not because I want you to empathize with me or feel bad for me, but because I want you to know in those moments when you see me acting that way, it's not you. And I don't want you to ever have a moment where you think that you pissed me off, you made me upset, or that you, for some reason, are the reason that I am showing up this way, because it has nothing to do with this team here, has nothing to do with your efforts, has everything to do with this thing that's happening over here. And so that's the first thing that I'll do, is I think being absolutely transparent and honest with the team, very important. Now, is that me crying on a call to my team being like, oh my God, guys, this is what's happening? Like, that'd be a little tough. That'd be a little tough to show up that way. But it's me being honest. I'm stating the facts and I'm letting them know. And listen, dude, like, I don't do it because I want to, because I would rather just not tell my team that stuff and just like let them focus on themselves. Mm-hmm. But I've just realized, given enough time, when I don't tell them when something's going on, then they end up thinking it's them. And then it's a worse situation to be in, because then they're sitting there thinking like, oh my God, does she think I'm bad? Does she think is she could fire me? Is she this, she that? And so I do always like to tell my team like where my head is at with things like that. And if there's something else going on, that would be just changing how I behave and show up. So like an example is even when we launched Alex's book, I was leading a lot of the book launch and my CFO at the time retired. And then a new CFO I was going to have come on didn't end up working out. And so then I was also CFO and there was a ton of stuff going on. And so I felt like I had to let the team know, hey guys, I'm just juggling more than I'm used to. So if like I don't get back to you immediately, if I don't seem as happy on a call, if I don't all these things, it's not anything to do with you. You guys are fantastic. And I'm going to try and keep reminding you of that. It has everything to do with me. And so I think that you will find, one, make it easy for your team to help you, and also make it easy for them to understand where your head's at. Okay. And so first, making it easy for them to understand where your head's at. Second is, if there's things that it's harder for you to do right now, that is an absolute opportunity for you to present to somebody else for them to step up. And so are there things that you're doing that you could give to somebody else? And I would say that for most people in your situation, there are. And so I always try to look at it as like every challenge I face can be an opportunity for somebody else in the business. You just have to look at it that way and also not hold on too tight during those times, because sometimes you need a little bit of margin so you can deal with something else because your attention's split.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point, because we came in like the second day of the year and just putting out a major fire, and then it's just been an accelerator. So it could have been going the opposite way. So we have good problems, but it's just moving like hyper speed right now, and I'm just trying to keep up.
Just tell them that. Just tell them that. You're doing your best. Most people are always doing their best.
Yeah, okay. Because I know Alex is big on the you adapt or die philosophy, and I guess that's I'm in that spot where it's just like got to keep rising to the occasion.
It never stops.
Okay. It's good to know.
It really never stops. I think that your relationship with it changes. I was just on a podcast like an hour ago and we were talking about suffering. And I think that the ability to endure long periods of discomfort, which I would consider as like suffering, is a skill of a lot of really great leaders. And so maybe you are in the season right now of becoming that person. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that you might not be happy right now, but you can still find joy in the fact that you are becoming a better person. You're probably acquiring a lot of skills right now. Acquiring skills doesn't feel good because you have to suck before you're good. So that's probably what's happening. Things are growing. It exposes that you have a deficit in skill. Whenever you have a skill that is not, I would say, like matured, it takes you a lot longer to do the thing and therefore feels hard when you're trying to do, say, you're trying to acquire 3-4 new skills at once. You're probably not even cognizant of this, right? But there's 3 or 4 things at once happening that you don't necessarily have a matured skill in, and you're trying to do all at once, which is most of business. And that's okay. You're going to be better off for it. And the cool thing, Nick, is that after this season, in 6 months, is when you reap the rewards of the work you put in now. This season will end. And then the irony of that is that you're probably sick like me, and you're going to be like, I miss it. I really miss those times. And it was just like hitting the gas, and it was just like, you know, up till late and getting up early, and you're just gonna be like, oh, that was the best. And it's gonna happen again. And you're like, oh my God, this is tough.
I led this company through COVID, and I feel like that I kind of look back fondly on that. That was probably the most difficult point in my life, and wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, you're building skills, and that's okay.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you. You really nailed it, and I got enormous comfort from this conversation. So I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate you asking.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, Layla.
Hey, Rose.
Because of you, I love hard conversations now. And
oh, that's so cool.
Your recent content is better than therapy. So
thank you.
My question for you is, well, right now I have a high ticket fitness business. It's very, very niche specific. It's vegan menopausal women. So it's just like booming right now. Yeah. I finally have A players on my team, 3 setters, 3 coaches. Amazing.
Good.
Don't have an operator and I still take the calls. Mm-hmm. How do I simultaneously scale the sales team so I can step out while also continuously improving the product/program?
Good question. So which one are you more skilled in?
Right now, sales.
Okay, that's good to know. Can you teach others how to do what you do? Are you a good teacher?
Yes.
It's also really good. Okay. So you are more skilled in sales. You're also a good teacher. Do you have anybody in sales who exemplifies sales leadership ability or no?
I'll have to hire.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. If you have 3 reps, I doubt there's anybody. If you did, it would probably not work. So
yeah,
let's not do that. Right now, do you have excess cash to invest in hiring, or are you hesitant to? So is it that you're not hiring somebody because you're unsure of where to hire, or is it that you want to preserve cash?
No, I can invest. I just still have scarcity mindset of like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get a customer ever, even though I know that's never going to happen.
Did you know you could think those thoughts and just also ignore them?
Trying.
You ignore it by just acting despite it. So I would encourage you, one, that thought is very common. And I was even like, literally when our business was making $50 million a year, I still had that thought. I was like, I don't know if I should hire these people because like, what if tomorrow it all blows up? Like one, everything could always blow up tomorrow. Happened to me when COVID happened. But the cool thing was got through it and it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And so I would say this, which is if you act like your business could end tomorrow, you will perpetuate the cycle that many do, which is people allow their fear to dictate their behavior, right? And then they make their fears come true by doing that. Your business will probably have a higher chance of ending if you have less leaders and less capable people. Do you agree?
100%.
So if you wanted to protect against that fear, would it make sense to hire capable people who could help you?
Yeah.
Then I think we should do that. Now we just need to identify which one we hire. Now I would say that it's tough because is the product you?
No.
No? Okay, well, then that's actually great. In your type of business, I would say that there's 2 ends I look at, which is like, eventually, yes, you need sales leadership. 3 people, it's more of like a sales lead. It's not even like, how many sales reps do you want to hire, though, or intend to?
Probably 2.
Do you have a sales bottleneck right now? Like, do you have a lot of leads and not enough people selling?
Yes.
Okay, good to know. So then it sounds like sales is the constraint.
Yeah.
Why do you want to improve the product, or is that just something that you continue to do?
I feel like the product market fit right now is super, super high. And I feel like it can just always be better and better and better to increase recurring.
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's currently, are people complaining and leaving?
No.
Okay. So it's currently not actually a problem. It's just a fake problem. Okay. Made up problem over here. So here's what I would do, which, by the way, I have lots of made up problems. I am product and customer success obsessed. So I get it. But I would say the constraint right now is sales. So let's focus on that.
Okay.
In my opinion, if you need to, say, add 2 sales reps, that probably will justify you're going to need a full-time sales manager. And so in my opinion, what I would do is I would, right now, so that you can get ahead of it, if you have the means, which you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have more of a chance of having a great stable business by hiring this person. I would put it into finding a sales manager who has the ability to recruit and train and onboard sales reps.
Okay.
You don't want somebody that hasn't built a team before. So the biggest mistake in a business of your size is people go hire somebody from some super fancy place. They've never ever even built a team from scratch. They've inherited teams. They've never had to hire people before. You want somebody from a small company, right? Who's like scrappy. They can get their hands in the dirt. They can like build it from the ground up. And then that will allow you to, one, coach that person because you are also good at doing this. And you get the bandwidth back so you can focus on the product, because the likely next problem will be the product. Right now it's sales, but usually how it moves is through the funnel, right? So it's like marketing, sales, product, customer success, finance, and around we go. So that's what I would do if I were you. And I think that's probably going to lead you to having the most bandwidth the fastest. Like, we want to solve the real problem first, and then the fake problem by then might actually be a real one.
How can I successfully paint the roadmap to my team right now? Leadership is a skill that you're helping me with through your content, but how do I paint that roadmap for them?
Do you have a vision deck?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So something I have in every company I've had is I keep a deck, and it has the vision for the business, which is, I would just put it like this. Yeah, the closest thing that you'll probably understand is, like, I essentially build a webinar for my team.
Mm.
So rather than selling them on a product, I sell them on a vision of where the company's going. And I actually do study webinars just to build the decks I built for my team. Because I think, what are we doing when we influence? We're selling people on an idea. We're compelling people towards a different future. And so in my opinion, that's the closest, I would say, like, structurally, how you want to structure something like that. And so you don't need 3 secrets or anything like that. But, like, I would say, essentially what you want to have is a written document that is compelling, that explains where the company is going. And so you could even Google, like, company strategy decks to see some of the, like, nitty gritty that people put in there. But that deck, what I do is I present it once a quarter, and then I update it at the end of the quarter every quarter, and then re-present it the next quarter. And then I reference it throughout the quarter on weekly meetings. And here's the thing. I don't do this just because my company's big. When acquisition.com was 4 people, I had a vision deck. So here's another thing I do with it. When I'm recruiting people, I send it to them. Now, I don't send it to just anyone because y'all are trying to hack my damn funnel, but I send it to people that have gotten far enough through the process that I know that they're the real deal and probably going to, you know, join the team. And I'm like, okay, cool. Before you do, here's something I want you to see. And so if I were you, that's probably what I would be doing. And I would probably not wait until a quarter to do it. I would say, build it this weekend or build it next weekend after you've looked for, put up an ad for a sales manager, and then present it to your team like the following week on Monday and say, hey, you know what? I don't think I've done the best job of talking about where we're going. And so I wanted to make this deck so that you guys are crystal clear on what we're doing here.
Perfect.
Got it?
Yeah. Thank you so much.